Hello and welcome to the next episode of Serving Up Sustainability. I'm Dominie Hogg, founder of Trident Supplied, and today for the first time I am joined by our new co-host and consultant partner, Julie Klein. Morning, Julie. Do you want to briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dominie. So I am founder of a company called Sustainable Kitchen. We're a team of chefs who we're all specialists in plant-based and allergen-free cooking, and we work with restaurants to help them cater better to, you know, the increasing number of people who are looking for healthier options, also plant-based options, and the huge number of people with allergies and intolerances. So we help them create new exciting menus. We also can train chefs up, and we love using our nutrition knowledge, etc., to help them.
Yes, and it's fantastic to have your expertise on this podcast. It's all about food, as we know, and so having your expertise is going to be very valuable.
Great, thank you.
We understand how sometimes it might feel like it's a bit difficult to know where to start implementing sustainable practices. So with every episode of Serving Up Sustainability, we're talking to industry experts about their approach and perspective, and we also aim to provide you with practical information on things that you can implement so that you can make step-by-step changes to achieve incremental positive change.
Sounds good. And today's podcast is about the issues we face around food waste. So, you know, I'm sure you've all heard about that. There's an enormous amount that is wasted across the whole supply chain. You've probably heard the stats. So the UN determined that if the global food we waste was a country, it would be the number three global greenhouse gas emitter in the world after China and the US, which is just mad when you think about that. So what can we do about this in the hospitality industry? Well, there's loads of things that restaurants, etc., can do in the kitchen before food hits customers' plates, with monitoring and reducing prep waste, for example. And we encourage our clients to repurpose any prep waste in their menu, so right up front at the menu design phase. And then obviously there's other things that restaurants can do about responsible disposal of food waste that is not eaten by customers. So they can avoid it going to landfill, for example. But what about further up the supply chain before raw ingredients are delivered to a restaurant? So what can restaurants do to influence food waste occurring there? Maybe it seems that you can't influence. Well, today we're joined by Jess from Waste Not. So we've got some inspiration for you today. Jess and her team help make the connection between farms that have surplus produce that may not meet strict cosmetic criteria and those who can put it to good use, namely restaurants in the hospitality industry. So welcome, Jess.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. We've got a few questions, and we'll just start actually with what mobilised you in the first place to get stuck into food waste and actually do something about it.
Okay, so there were a few reasons as to why I got into fighting against food waste. The main reason is because the actual crux of food waste starts at before it's even harvested. Everyone seems to think that within kitchens there's a whole load of food waste dependent on if people have overordered, plate waste, not using the produce to its full potential, but actually there's so much more that begins pre-farm gate even before it's harvested. I used to work for a farm and do all the sales and marketing where we would grow beautiful heritage varieties for restaurants, pubs, anyone within the hospitality sector. And make sure they would receive really high quality produce. We'd worked with small farms, but even there was a whole lot of wastage due to contractual obligations, which a lot of farms have to adhere to, but obviously take into account the effects of Mother Nature. Now, we all know, being in the UK, you can't guarantee on any weather. So for farmers, it's really hard to be able to control their yield. So they grow typically over by about 10 to 15% on whatever crop that is. So we take that surplus, if it's a good crop, and find a commercial outlet for it. Otherwise, it gets ploughed back into the ground, sent to landfill, used for anaerobic digestion, or sent for animal feed. So there's a whole host of ways that it doesn't reach our plates, purely because it's not commercially viable for the farmer to harvest it. So we get the surplus, and we also get the outtakes, which are the aesthetically so-called inferior produce, which the farmers can't necessarily sell on an open market because of perceptions and the way that these guidelines have been imposed over the past few decades.
Mm-hmm.
So my relationship with farmers and my relationship with chefs allowed me to identify that there was a whole load of produce were going to waste, and a whole load of chefs who didn't actually care what the produce looked like, and that would be happy if they knew that this produce was going to waste, be happy to give it home,
exactly,
use it and serve it up as beautiful dishes.
Well, that's the thing, they're going to chop it.
Exactly.
Usually, right? So
it's good for them as well, because you know they're worried about the margins on their side, and if they can get a slightly cheaper product that is actually going to be the same quality, then in terms of what they're doing with it, then
I mean, we operate on a impression management system, so we always make sure the chefs are aware where the produce has come from, what it's going to be like, and make sure that they know that the worth and the value of that produce shouldn't be any less, obviously, because of the produce that it is and where it's come from and why it's there, it's going to be slightly less. But the amount of conversations I've had with people as to who think it might be free or an incremental charge, once you make them realise why it's not free, the same money, time and effort goes in from
same
the
resources,
farmer,
water,
absolutely,
usage,
to grow
this
same produce. Mm-hmm. And just because in our minds we think, oh, actually we shouldn't be using that, we just need to change the way we've been working and thinking.
And nutritionally it'll still have the same properties as well.
And we only work with farms that are red tractor or leaf assured. So we make sure all the farms that we work with aren't using horrible pesticides, and they're growing really naturally. Their labour is very much looked after. So socially it's all engaging as well. And we help them with their biodiversity as well. So to kind of set aside, make sure their hedgerows are in good order as well. So
great. And so you talked about some of the wastage there that happens, you know, even at harvest. So where have you noticed the most wastage? Is it there, or is it through the, you know, once it gets into logistics and storage?
It's definitely there.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's Wrap did a report recently in the summer, just detailing the absolute carnage that goes on, and it's just not really been approached as a topic before, and in my eyes it's because it's been such a big issue that it's kind of ignorance is bliss, and we haven't wanted to address it. All this talk of waste, food waste, you know, you find a banana in the back of your veg drawer, turn it into banana bread, and that's really important. Household waste is exceptionally important. However, it doesn't touch the sides of how much is actually being wasted before it's harvested or reaches the farm gate. You're right that there is wastage along supply chains, and actually the reason some of these guidelines are in place is to ironically reduce wastage, because it means that if you've got a box of courgettes and they're all the same size, they're all going to fit nicely in a box. There's not going to be any bashing about or slipping or anything like that. So the courgettes are less likely to get damaged. However, that then goes on to cause the waste before they're boxed. So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. And the way we're tackling that is by saying, well, you put your so-called perfect courgettes in your box that aren't going to roll around, and we'll take the ones that are going to roll around.
Brilliant.
And if they end up a bit scarred, then no one's going to care. But they're going to get eaten.
Yeah. Well done.
Do you find that there's an opportunity to change the way that consumers demand what's on the menu to some extent? So, you know, you talk about they have surplus for a particular vegetable on a yearly basis, dependent on the vegetable. Dependent on the weather. Do you think that there are ways in which we can, particularly with social media today, rapidly change for that year? You know, kale is suddenly in, or because we've got loads of it, is that something that we can do, you know, particularly now with wonky vegetables appearing on the menu and people getting into that as a trend?
Yeah, I absolutely do, and I think social media, for all its flaws, is a great vehicle to be able to make social change. And I know Hubbub and Truin, who operates the campaigns that they run, it's social media focused, and that's how they've got so much traction with that. But I think with, in terms of food trends, it's a leveler, so everyone can connect to it. And I think if you can create a wave of positivity and feeling of doing good by choosing one vegetable over the other, it's a simple choice, and chefs have so much power to be able to do that. And I think with chefs who are high profile in particular to lead the way, we're working really closely with Phil Howard at Church Road, and he's got a menu on called the Little Sprouts menu, and that's purely with Waste Not Produce. So it's really good value. The proceeds go to a charity in Barnes that helps children learn how to grow fruit and vegetables. So it all connects up the dots with what we're doing, what they want to do, and how it's just educating. And it's a big piece around education, be it for the hospitality industry, the agricultural industry, and the consumers as well. I have no indication as to how it works with supermarkets and their management of what they want to put out there. All I know is that when they put so-called grade B produce out, it's much more popular than their grade A, because actually the consumer doesn't really care.
Yeah.
But they can't hit their margins with it, and that's why there's a it's not so prolific within the retailers.
I mean, to be honest, unless a chef is using, you know, a vegetable whole, like, you know, for example, you know, a whole artichoke, or a, you know, a pepper or something like that, in which case it might be whole or half, they're not, if they're going to be chopping it down to, you know, to some kind of, you know, other, you know, dish, the consumer's not going to know, are they? So as long as, you know, they can verify that the quality is still there, which they have to for safety reasons anyway, they're not going to serve anything that's substandard quality, then no one really knows. So I think it's fantastic what you're doing, and it's already, you know, if the more restaurants who get on board with it, I think that's going to make a huge change.
I mean I think it's a progression, that the more the message gets out there of what we're doing, what we're offering, how it can impact, how they can make such a big difference. And the difference it makes to the farmers is enormous.
Brilliant.
And that is an industry which needs all the support it can
get. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a real sign of solidarity, really, to be able to understand the problems that the farmers are facing and then be able to support them through taking those products and making it into the hero of the menu for that particular year. So.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think one of the most important things is this reconnecting with food. And I think so many people have lost that chain of where it's grown, how it's grown, who grows it, and the eating of it. And we need to fill in the gaps almost and make that reconnection with the grower, the provider, and that respect that has just been completely dominated by bottom line big company profits needs to be reestablished. Don't get me wrong, food's a massive money-making industry. I get that, and I know that that has to happen, but at the same time it definitely should not be at the expense of the welfare of the people growing and making the food.
Or the planet.
Or the planet. And the connections, actually, restaurants are the key connector, I think, for people living in urban areas to understand life in the rural environment. Because they're so connected with food and farming and agriculture and nature, and that's the kind of experience that I think consumers, particularly, you know, the next generation, millennials, Gen Z, you know, they're very interested in the environment, and yet a lot of them are living in urban areas where they don't really have much opportunity to interact with it. So I think those experiences that restaurants can offer, really connecting them back with the land, is going to be really, really good for them and good for the customers as
well. And I think with what we offer is, for the chefs that we work with, we say, look, come to the farm, come and see where it's grown, what's happening, speak to the farmers. The farms love talking about what they do. They relish it, and it's really great to be able to open up a whole different world for people who haven't had that opportunity before to really see how it all works and what goes on there.
And what kind of influence can chefs have with having those connections directly with the farmer in terms of what crops are actually grown? Or, I mean, obviously it depends on the land that they've got and what that land's suitable for, but is there an opportunity for them to be able to influence? Or
well, I think the way that we work, we very much say it's farmer-led. So we're going back to how we used to eat and think of food. We only deal with UK farms at the moment. That may change within the next 3 years or so. I'm going to look to branch out wider because it's a global problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just UK based. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, we're UK. So it's all seasonal.
Mm.
All the produce that we source is seasonal. So from that point of view, it's dictatable up to a point.
Sure.
But actually, it's very much farmer-led. So because of the nature of the produce, then and what we're trying to do, they're not going to grow a new crop or more of a crop. Mm.
But what about volume, say?
Well, volumes, I mean, this is the crux of it, is that there is so much volume being wasted that at the moment, what we're offering, what we do is we say to the restaurants and the chefs that use our produce, next week we're going to have available and give them a list. So the farmer has said to me, right, we can forecast that this is what we're going to have available as surplus. And it's a list of between about 10 and 14 different types of produce. So there is scope for them to choose, but ultimately it's working along the lines of what's available as surplus, because there are a few companies that are offering surplus out of stock, which isn't what we do. We very much have traceability, provenance, make sure it's genuine surplus. And that's why we don't have a whole list of, right, you can get anything you want for surplus.
Of course.
We are purely from the farmer. This is what we're going to have next week. Certain crops do lend themselves to being a regular on that list. But, I mean, the carrots and parsnips of the world, beetroots, for example, apples,
kale is one I've noticed because I have the odd box, so I have the same kind of I notice what gets put on there. Mushrooms, for example, I find is never on there.
So there's where you find that there are different classes of produce in terms of it being a sellable product. So button mushrooms, for example, can get them more or less within a different sizing and it will fit into that class. It's like onions. There's a market for small onions, there's a market for big onions, and there's a market for medium onions. So unless they're rotten, which we wouldn't be able to sell anyway, that is our only criteria, is that it's edible and usable.
Of course.
So certain produce does lend itself to not go into surplus, whereas
that's really interesting.
And obviously it goes along with the store time as well. So if you can harvest a product and keep it stored, again, that then dictates how long you've got to sell it, how much you need to be selling it by. But this year we had a lot of apples be surplus. They had great crops, but the labour was going to be so costly because they didn't have the commercial outlet. So we organised it for the farmer to be able to cover his costs with the harvesting and then sell the apples on, whereas they would have just been left to rot otherwise.
And that's where it gets very exciting for me and my chef team, because there's a resurgence in fermentation, for example. Lots of customers are wanting that for health reasons, because everyone's recognising the link between fermented food and gut health, etc. So that's fantastic. And that's, a time-honoured tradition of preserving harvested food.
Because you have to.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we love doing fermentation courses when we train chefs around London, and that's, something I'd love to see more chefs get involved in, and it's very safe, very possible in a commercial kitchen. Just one other question, Jess. So what role do you think logistics and storage plays in generating food waste? So I know you said it's most of the food waste is at the harvesting, but do you see some of the challenges also in the logistics
part? There's definitely improvements to be made along the whole of the process, and logistics is not my my bag.
But sure, and what in your previous experience?
That I certainly have seen wastage, yeah, occur. And then, you know, you look further afield, and if it's people buying tomatoes from Spain, for example, they buy them unripe, they ripen in lorries on the way, same with avocados. There's no guarantee that's going to happen. I've seen lorry fulls of tomatoes, avocados, whatever else they do that process with, completely be ruined by this logistical, scientific way of ripening and it not actually coming through. Because ultimately, you're dealing with a product that by nature isn't, it's not robotic.
It's not uniform.
They're not all going to act the same way. And you're dealing with technology trying to sort that out. And the two don't, sometimes it works. Yeah. A lot of the time it works.
I mean, you think just general trees around the world, you know, they're all kind of wonky, aren't they? And they're not all just uniniform, are they? Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's like us. Oh, it'd be awful if they were.
It's like us. Right. Yeah. And this is a strong message that we bring through with Waste Not as well, is that, you know, if you're a person or a parsnip, it doesn't matter what you look like. You've got to be yourself and value what you are and who you are.
Yeah.
And we supply quite a lot of schools. And they take the boxes, because we do a mixed box as well for a sort of educational PR innovation pieces as well. And they take these boxes and they take them into a classroom to teach about food waste, but also about how perceptions can alter how we act, which is a massive thing for me to be able to get that message across. And then they use them in the kitchen. So the children see this whole process of this food being, A, being rescued, B, then being used for a great message,
brilliant,
and
so
C,
good,
then being used to nourish them. So, that's a big win.
Yeah,
there's definitely space for a kind of body positive messaging for parsnips.
Yeah. Well, we're working with Albright, the Albright Collective.
Oh, yeah.
I'm good friends with Sabrina, and she is all over it, and she's such a massive source of support.
Yeah.
And her team are... they're flexible, they just really value what we're doing, which is amazing. And in the early days, she was, you know, cheerleading us and using our produce now. And that means a lot. And I think within Albright, being a women's networking club, it's very much about the positivity message and making sure that that feeling of value and worth is very much there.
Oh, that's really interesting. What have been the key challenges that you've faced as a business? Because it can't be easy, you know, trying to get, you know, what is effectively surplus vegetables to market.
The key challenges, I'd say, it's probably convincing people to change the way things have been done.
Yeah.
However long anyone can remember.
I'm familiar with that challenge.
Yes, yes, I imagine you are. But, you know, just keep on chipping away. And, you know, I think it's, like we were saying earlier, it doesn't make sense. When you make people actually step back, look at a process and think, oh yeah, actually, why has it been done like that for so long? Why? And if, how can we change it? If the process is there and the ways and means to change a process that is inherently not right on a number of levels, and the ways and means to do that are there, why wouldn't we? So the first farm that I started working with were incremental in making this. They took a massive leap of faith. So I went to them and was like, I've got a really good idea. Why don't we do this? And I'm like, maybe, could do.
It's going to be hard.
But people won't want it. I was like, well, I think that's where you're wrong. Because I'd had a few conversations with chefs. We work with big contract caterers who, once you get to the right gatekeepers, massive progress. All very positive. So we're now hopefully being seen as a benchmark of you can't not have us, rather than we've got this.
That's fantastic.
USP of Waste Not. It's something you have to be doing almost.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, so the UK government at the end of 2018, what, you know, appointed a dedicated waste champion, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, they've announced their resources and waste strategy. You know, they have committed to targets. So, you know, the sooner restaurants start getting transparency of, you know, where they're wasting food, whether that's up the supply chain or in their own restaurants, then the better, because I think they're going to have to start reporting on it very soon. So I think, you know, the more proactive they are now. Plus, you know, the consumers are wanting this information anyway, aren't they? You know, they're wanting to go to a restaurant that caters well for them, whether that be from a health perspective or you know, their environmental, you know, desires, I guess, to, you know, do the right thing. So they're going to choose a restaurant that's going to be, making positive changes in this direction. So hopefully we're going to see a shift.
I think so. And I think it's really important what you mentioned about the government, because I think they're doing a lot to do with the household waste and retail. But the hospitality sector, the Guardians of Grub, I think it is, that's a great initiative. And also the fact that DEFRA last year gave this £15 million funding to five charities to make sure that they could make it cost neutral for them to source surplus produce directly from the farm. So I've been working with Fair Share since August. And we have enabled the direct logistics for them to be able to pick up surplus from the farm. So we've done mixed boxes and we do stew packs, and it basically makes it cost neutral for the farmer. Now, a charity like Fair Share has always worked along the guidelines of getting surplus of dried goods or fresh produce or whatever, but donated. So this commercial strategy has been a big learning curve for everyone involved. And it's been enabled by DEFRA, which has been absolutely brilliant. So yeah, the farm, we, and actually working with charities was a big box to tick for me when setting up Waste Not. I wanted it to play a big part of what we did. So from a selfish point of view, that's been great. But also they've really benefited from getting a lot of fresh produce in that A, would have been wasted, and B, that they can put to good use and nourish people other, you know, that would otherwise not have.
I imagine from their perspective, it's also about making sure you get the nutritional, the range of nutritional value from surplus produce, because if you're going direct from to the farm will probably have surplus of one particular thing, but you can't live off just one particular thing. So that's where you get the boxes and
So they always get loads of bananas. But the thing with bananas is if they're surplus, you've probably got a few hours in which they're gonna be all right. Shipped out somewhere and then they're gonna be useless. So what we do, like I said, is we've developed these stew packs which contain a mixture of carrot, parsnips and potatoes, just really easily usable. So
good,
if it goes
lovely
to
UK produce,
it goes to a night shelter or a you know, a homeless centre, and it's already there, they know, right, we've got 3 kilos of each, however much we need to make this many covers for lunch, we've got. And it just goes straight away and they get it. And it's working really well. And the farmer went to see their distribution centre in Birmingham just before Christmas. And it was eye-opening. I went to the one in Deptford and it really is eye-opening. And I think to be able to help in that way, really, it's amazing. And I think it's opened all our eyes. And just because there is so much surplus, and for it to be wasted and people going hungry, it's nuts.
Yeah.
So
being
heartbreaking to make that connection means a lot.
Yeah, really good. And so for our listeners then, Jess, what are the top things that restaurants can do to help influence? So they might be thinking that they can't influence the supply chain, but to me, you know, I encourage people to start having conversations about even just challenging minimum orders, for example, if they're not going to be able to use it all, and then some of that goes to waste. So what are your top tips for what restaurants can do to help influence the supply chain, actually, to reduce waste?
Well, I think get involved with waste not, obviously. Yeah. Try and make sure you don't overorder, because that is a big source of wastage. Mm-hmm. Education around using the whole plant. So we help chefs realise, you know, that carrot tops are amazing as a mm-hmm. herb, and, you know, beetroot leaves are great as a, like a spinachy type.
Or radish leaves
radish
are wonderful.
Leaves, so good.
So good.
So education around that. I think portion sizes as well, mm-hmm. as to what they're giving the consumer. But also, I think restaurants, like you said earlier, play a massive role in educating the consumer.
Yes, so I agree with that.
I think... From a whole level, actually. So making sure that if they do source surplus, making sure the end consumer knows that their dish contains surplus produce.
I mean, even just the addition of wonki on the menu item, I've seen that in some menus, and I've been very encouraged to see that that's something they're wanting to promote.
Yes, exactly.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. Because I think, as we were saying before, the whole household waste issue is very prevalent to the public, and that's great. But actually, there's a whole other world where they can have an influence and they can help. And that channel through the restaurants is vital, I think, because it's not necessarily going to get there any other way.
One other question, is there any tech that you guys are considering or that you're aware of at, you know, the harvest stage that is you can see is, you know, the future in terms of innovating how we can be better informed of any potential waste?
There's a lot of interesting tech going on within the agri-tech industry. It's really interesting. Yeah. And I get really excited, but I get a bit geeky about it because it's there's this potato measurer which Cambridge University have been involved, this technology that they've been growing,
that's very innovative.
And there's loads of there's just so many different things. We work with a nursery that grow micro herbs, and the technology they've got on there is incredible to stop any
fantastic
wastage, because actually when you're growing micro herbs, the resources that go into that, you cannot afford to have any wastage.
That's right.
So we don't source from them because they don't have any wastage. But the technology that is going towards preventing that wastage is incredible.
Brilliant.
And I think the costs are going to come down as people, as like anything with technology, the more it's necessary to have, the more it's going to become cheaper to produce, and the less it's going to cost the farmers.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. Well, I think we're out of time, so we'll finish there. But it's been fantastic having you on the podcast
and
hearing all about Waste Not and what you've been doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Serving Up Sustainability. If any of our listeners would like to find out more about how they can use Waste Not for their supply, or talk to us about other ways to tackle food waste in their business, do get in touch with us on hello@triedandsupplied.com. To get the latest on Serving Up Sustainability, follow @tried_supplied on Twitter or our related blog @saucydressings on Instagram. See you next time.